0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock today. And we've been looking at the Sue Gray report. Obviously, a long-awaited Sue Gray report into the Partygate scandal in the UK. And we're told that Boris Johnson has had to offer an apology to number 10 security and cleaning staff for their appalling treatment, which was revealed in the report. Of course, we heard stories about vomit, about red wine stains, but also about lack of respect and multiple incidents where... of poor treatment, it was how it was described, of poor treatment of security and cleaning staff. Linda, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
You're not surprised, Linda, at what's in that report?
Not at all. I worked as a cleaner since the 70s, both full-time, part-time, and some people are lovely, really nice, and other people just look down their nose, and I will walk away because I'm worth the respect as far as I'm concerned. But people, when you work in office cleaning, it's obviously very different from working in a private home cleaner. And in offices, some of the people, you're just appalled by their behaviour.
And Linda, just to explain, you're talking about working in Ireland, in Dublin?
Yeah. I've worked both in Dublin and the UK, and actually there's no difference between people's attitudes. Some people, you know, They're marvellous about it. They accept that you've got a job to do. You're doing it. That's all they want. And there's other people just have to look down their noses at you because you're just the cleaner, you know. And I have a skill set.
Yeah, and a very valuable skill set. And yeah. And it's very hard work.
Yeah, you know, it's physical work. And as I say, you have to know what you're doing. You have to know the order to do it in. You know, and I don't understand why people sort of feel that, I'm somehow better than you because, especially as, you know, as I pointed out to one guy who was sort of giving me this is my second job because I'm saving up for a holiday, and B, I'm actually an engineer, so what's your point?
Are you actually an engineer? Are you you qualified as an engineer, Linda?
Yeah.
And
I took up cleaning as a part-time job when, you know, wages were low. It was a handy way of earning money that I could set aside. It wasn't part of my wages, so I didn't have to account. So I could spend about 9 months a year doing a second job, working the evening hours, and it was handy. And then after my child was born, it was so hard to try and find a job to fit in around childcare, school, all the rest of it. I took up cleaning full time. You know, the pay, funny enough, as a private cleaner, the pay was comparable.
And you could get as well paid working as an engineer as you could, or working as a cleaner as you could as an engineer?
Probably not as much. No, obviously not as much, but I didn't want to commit to full time work. And obviously, as an engineer, I've got to be able to do full time, overtime, things like that. As a cleaner, I could set my hours, so I could only, you know, I decided I was only going to work mornings, I'd be at home in the afternoons for my children,
and so, yeah, you could work around it.
We could afford it.
And tell me, have you ever, again, I'm coming back to that Sue Gray report, have you ever had to clean up after an office party?
A couple of times, mostly fine. But it's not just office parties. I literally walked into, I used to clean an office block, and I opened the toilet and I just stood there, turned around, walked up to my supervisor, said, I'm not going in there, it's a health hazard. And it was covered in diarrhoea.
The toilet was covered in diarrhoea?
Yeah, and it was dried. So it'd obviously been there a few hours, nobody had contacted anybody to say, look, could you, you know. And they actually, the company I worked for, had a special group because it was a health hazard. So they had to send for the special cleaners to come in to clean this. And people had obviously walked through this because you could see footprints. So we spent we spent time
going down,
checking the carpets because there was brown footprints on the carpet. People will...
OK, we're going to have to take a moment, Linda.
That was many years ago, and it's still, I still stand there going, how? Why?
So somebody tracked this, or more than one possibly, people tracked human feces, yes. Let's say,
yeah.
From an office toilet. And out into around the back, and you had to see if it went actually up to somebody's desk. God, you could have played detective there, Linda.
Well, all we were worried about was it over the carpets? Because, you know, somebody would start shouting at us that the carpet was dirty. She said,
"This is this kind of putting the Sue Gray report in the Hapley place, Linda."
I've seen the Sue Gray report, and I have to say, the vast majority of people that work in offices are lovely. You know, I remember there was one woman who you'd arrive, it was a large open plan office, and they used to all hand up their waste baskets, and you'd stand at the top, empty it, and hand it back, and you know, you didn't have to go around collecting their waste baskets. And I've had other times where, you know, you've gone in to clean an office, and you knock on the door and say, cleaner's here, I need to get in for 10 minutes or whatever, and been screamed at. I had one guy who told me I had to wait an hour and a half after my finishing time.
Because he wanted to do his work first?
Yeah. And I just said, can't do that, I have to finish at 9, you know, contract. The company's only contracted till 9 o'clock. We're not allowed to be on the premises after 9 o'clock. And he was obnoxious about it. And the same company, his boss, knock on the doors. Sorry, you know, don't mean to disturb you. Oh, it's all right. I'll go and have a coffee while you clean the office. No problem.
Yeah, so because that was my next question, actually. Do you find that there's a culture in some offices where, you know, people are generally really respectful towards you and, you know, accommodating, and in other places maybe not so much?
It does tend. I find that if you get a certain amount, a certain level of it, you know that it's just a company culture that, you know, they will look down on you. Other companies, and I've seen it where I was snapped at by a member of staff and senior member of staff walking by and said, no, you do not talk to people like that. Yeah, and it was just jumped on immediately. So there, it can be a little bit of company culture.
And what about houses then? Like, I know you clean homes as well. Like,
yeah.
Do you find, first of all, do people clean up for you, before you, because they're embarrassed to let you into the house the way they would actually normally have it?
I have come across this woman, and actually ended up explaining to the woman that while I appreciate she had young children, and you know yourself that, you know, children can make a mess far, far above anybody else. And she just felt she had to clean this up before, and I had to explain to her, sometimes by you cleaning it up, it makes my job harder. And not to worry about it, I fully understand that young children seem to explode. Especially if there's something that's going to make a mess, they will explode. Yes. You know, it really, she paid me. I could do this very easily. So, you know, God bless the poor woman. She was so embarrassed about it. But at the same time, it's, you know, you're paying me. Don't worry about it, honestly. And then you do have the ones that you walk in and they will give you this list of orders. And they basically are ordering you around. And when you sort of look, I know my job, I know what's, you know, where I'm to go, what to do, there's no need for this.
And
I had it one time, and I just eventually just looked at the woman and said, look, I don't know why you think being rude to me is acceptable. It isn't. Now, either you stop or I leave. And she thought, if you're going to be like that, leave. So I picked up my wages, left, and said, find yourself another cleaner.
Do you find, no? I mean, that's obviously not a great relationship scenario, but like, do you find, what is the relationship generally between yourself and, because you're going into people's homes, I mean, and often obviously people will be there and their children will be there or whatever. Do you become friends with any of the people that you work for?
Yes, in many ways you do. It's a very odd relationship in many ways because you often know things about the family that others don't know. you know, because they're just living their lives around you. And they will talk to you because they see you in their home. So they will often discuss things with you they may not discuss
with their friends,
members of
yeah.
family or something. I find this sometimes with the elderly, that they will come and talk to me about something to get it clear in their minds before they discuss it with their adult children. Just so they can sort of get it clear and, you know, they have some, but they've discussed it, especially if they, some adult children can be quite, look, so I know what's best for you. And I understand they're looking after their parents, but the parents can get quite, so I don't want this battle. I want all my arguments clear and, yeah. So it's a very odd relationship because you are friendly with them, you're in their home, but at the same time, they're paying you to do a job. So I still have to do all the cleaning.
Yes.
And anything else that they may require. So it's a very odd relationship.
I know that you've said that you did voluntary work as well.
Yeah.
And you felt that you... Explain to me how you felt people dealt with you or treated you when they heard what you did for a living.
They'd come in to the group, probably something I was part of before they arrived. I'd be doing a certain... often sort of a higher ranking job and something I was well used to doing. They wouldn't realise I had an engineering background. So I'd be given reports, whatever. And then at some stage I discovered that I was a cleaner for a living. And at that point it was always sort of, oh, well, you wouldn't understand these things. You're just a cleaner. And I'm standing there going, of course I understand these things. And literally to one point where I had written up a report on something we had discussed it at the meet before, came back up and said, well, do you think we should get somebody that actually knows what they're talking about to do this report? The report that had been accepted. And the only reason he changed his mind is because I was just a cleaner. So you do get that it's, oh, you're just a...
And given you've felt that and you're aware of that, do you volunteer the information to people that you are a cleaner easily?
Yeah, I have. You know, it is a skill set. It proves how organised I am, because if you're going into somebody's home for a limited amount of time, you've got to be very organised to get that place cleaned. You know, you've got to be able to start and finish and at set times. So I've got skills that they don't have. I know this. But because they don't know what is entailed in it, and sometimes some of the knowledge people expect you to have, especially the elderly, you get, do you know anything about? But sometimes you end up sort of getting this knowledge. It just, you've gone off and you look somebody up for them or something like that. So I think it's because it's seen as a menial job, and because it's a menial job or a hands-on job, or you don't have to have brains to do it, whereas you do actually, as I say, you have to be organised. You have to be a very good administrator.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah?
To keep all of if you're doing a number of clients, you have to keep everything in check and know where everyone is at.
You can't gossip, even among to other family members. The only time is if you can that sort of say something is if you're worried about their health. But otherwise,
you have to be discreet.
Totally discreet.
There must be things you hear and you see, though, Linda, that it's hard to keep the secrets.
No, it's just you. It's part of the job. It goes with the job description. There's people probably sitting in their car between going from doing one caring job and on to the next, and they're doing that, right, well, I've finished with them, like this client's coming up, and they're refreshing their memory to the last conversation or whatever. Yeah. They'll never discuss that to anybody else because they know they can't.
Linda, will you stay with us? Because I'm loving the insight you're giving us into that world, into your world, your work world. I'll just say to people, WhatsApp number for us if you want to get in touch is 087 184 3709. That's 087 184 3709. Or you can just call in at 0818 715 815. I want to bring in Liam now. And Liam, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm good. Liam, you're a hospital porter.
I am indeed, yes.
Another very important job. And you wanted to talk to us about your colleagues.
Oh, I certainly do. I want to acknowledge the work done by the cleaners during the COVID. I've worked in the COVID unit myself for 2.5 years. And there was this Brazilian guy, Diego, worked in there for 2.5 years. And his work ethic was fantastic. He couldn't do enough. He was so helpful. And so are most of the Brazilians. And most of them are here studying. They'd be solicitors and psychologists and everything. But the work they do, they don't get the thanks that they should. And also the wages they are on is absolutely scandalous. A cleaner's on, let's see here, 11.55 an hour, or the guys in A&E are on 12.02. Now, during the COVID, these people had to go into rooms where people had COVID, and they probably spent more time than the rest of us in these rooms cleaning up and everything. And their job is so, so important, because if these guys are not doing their job right, we're all in trouble. But they're certainly not getting the acclimation they should. And their wages, certainly.
Those wages are low. Give them to me again. 11.
It's 11.55 and 12.02.
Yeah, so barely over minimum wage there. I think the minimum wage is $10.50 an hour at the moment.
But how can any union allow this to go on and say and justify this? I want to give you an example. The guys on nights got 12.02 on a third for working Saturday night. And us as porters, if we work Saturday night overtime, we get €35 an hour plus 8%.
Almost 3 times exactly what the cleaners are getting.
We're getting more for nearly one night than these guys get for a week. It's a disgrace, and it shouldn't be allowed to continue. I know these guys work for contractors, but still in all, there's no way, and unfortunately they've no voice, because as I say, the majority of the people working in the hospital I work in are from Brazil and from other countries, and they're here studying. So they've actually no voice, but this shouldn't be justified under any circumstances.
And do they get the respect that they deserve within the hospital, Liam?
I wouldn't think so, no. Maybe a few do, but I do have to say their work ethic is unbelievable. There's no such thing as saying that's not my job or this is not my job. All I can speak about is my own experience and the people I've worked with, and I can't applaud them enough. They're amazing.
And, you know,
these people have to clean up when people get vomit and all the other stuff that goes with it. And to be paid 11 something an hour in this day and age, it's absolutely disgraceful. And I would ask if Situ Union is part of, some of them are in Situ Union, and how can Situ Union justify allowing that to go on when their colleagues beside them are getting 3 times as much?
And I was going to say, Liam, my memory of being the last time I was in hospital, that cleaners and catering staff can often be the one people who'll give you the smile or have the time of day for you when all the nurses and everybody else are running around, you know, running off their feet. They're the ones that actually can, you know, touch base with you and keep an eye out for you.
Oh, yeah, because when they're in there cleaning the rooms, because in the COVID unit, there were all cubicles and, you know, the doors were closed. And these people would go in and they'd be cleaning. And they probably would be spending more time with the patient than the rest of us.
Yeah.
And this guy, Diego, he was unbelievable and so kind to the patients. If we needed a hand moving the patient over on a trolley, he'd give a hand. He came in every morning. And I really do hope that, I don't know, it seems to be not decided yet whether they're getting €1,000 or not.
That was my next question, Liam. Did they get the €1,000 or what is the story with that now?
Well, nobody seems to know. I've asked some of the bosses here in the hospital today, and some say it's up to noon and whether they get it or not, or they might get the full amount. Nobody seems to know. But I tell you one thing, they deserve it more than most people in the hospital, and they should be the first to get it.
Absolutely. Liam, will you stay there? I've got another former cleaner, I think, on another line. Mary, good afternoon.
Hello, yes.
Yeah, you were a cleaner in the Department of Defence.
I was, yes.
And how was that?
Pardon?
How was that, Mary?
Oh, well, I had no problems. Nobody, I was treated the same as everyone in the building.
Did they have any parties in there?
Oh, yeah, there was a few. The army used to cook lovely food. That's what I liked about it. They used to cook lovely meals. There wasn't parties as such. They'd have kind of do's on, but there weren't parties. You know?
Right, there was no vomit stains or red wine stains to be looked after.
No, I don't know.
But you didn't feel that you were in any way looked down on or...
Not at all.
And were the wages good, Mary?
Well, when I started first, they were small, but I kept getting increases, you know. But eventually, after 4.5 years of being a cleaner, I was promoted to service officer. So it paid off for me.
Right. And were you unionised as a cleaner in the Department of Defence?
Oh, yeah, we were. I'd imagine I was, yes. But I went... Oh, what's the word? I can't think now. Oh, yeah, well, I eventually was relocated to social welfare. Oh, I went established, that's the word. I went established, and only for that I wouldn't have had been relocated to another another government office, because Defence were relocating down to Newbridge.
Oh, right, yeah. So you could have been left high and dry.
No, I would have been back on the social welfare system if I didn't go established. But you, they had to give me another government office. Social welfare office on the Navan Road, I got.
And tell me, Mary, did you ever feel like anyone was looking down their nose at you, like Linda was describing there?
Never. I didn't experience anything of that, anything like that.
And you had no qualms telling people what you did?
No. I know, it was a job. The view I took was it was an honest job.
And inside in the offices themselves, well, I suppose they wouldn't. Would there be people in there late at night when you'd be in there cleaning?
Oh, yes. And then the high-ranking army people will be in there too in the offices.
Yeah, yes. Well, I think, you know, isn't there a thing in the army that if you're an officer, you get people to make up your bed and do those kind of jobs for you? You don't have to...
This was head office, you know. It was just
right.
An office.
Yeah.
It was only offices, you know, it wasn't a barracks.
Right.
Yeah, it was the head office of. It was Infirmary Road. I was in, you know.
Anyway, you look back fondly on your time as a cleaner, an office cleaner.
Well, I can't complain, because I didn't expect. Number one, when I was looking for, I was down 2 years stamp for a contributory pension, and that was my goal, just to get my 2 years up. But I didn't expect to get a job with a small pension out of it.
But you did. And you're drawing that pension now, Mary, are you?
Yeah, with my contributory pension, yes.
Great stuff. Okay, well, it's good to hear the other side of it, Mary. Many thanks.
It's not a large pension, but it helps. Because I only had a couple of years service. That's all. But still, it's a help.
It is, yeah. I'm sure every little helps, as the ad goes.
Yeah. Okay. And before that, I was in the rag trade. That's the job I used to do, because I never did cleaning before till I went to Defence. But it was hard work now. Everyone got a floor each. It was hard work.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, no doubt about it. It's hard work. Mary, yeah. I'll let you go, Mary. I want to bring in David. David, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, you were in the private sector as a cleaner.
Yeah.
Where were you?
You know it very well, at Kerry Group.
Oh, yes. In Listowel or in Tralee?
In Listowel.
I know it very, very well.
Yeah.
And what was that like? What were you doing in there?
I was cleaning and sanitising. As I was telling your researcher, they make ingredients for baby formula, so everything has to be spotless.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a very, very high standard of cleaning that would be required.
Yeah.
In an ingredients facility like Kerry Group. And were you there long?
I was in the factory for 22 years.
Do you think it's different? So were you just doing the industrial areas? You weren't doing like the offices or the kitchens or the other?
No.
So just
just the production areas.
Do you think that maybe you were treated differently when you're doing that you're part of a team, you know, a very important, obviously, crucial part of the team?
Well, it was a very important job because they would have frequent external audits. And if they failed that, they could lose contracts.
Absolutely. I mean, it's possibly one of the most crucial elements of the entire process, the cleaning side of it. But what I'm saying is that do you think that's a slightly different role than general office cleaning or home cleaning that we've been talking about?
Yeah, it probably is, because we were very highly regarded.
Were you highly paid?
Yeah, it was good enough.
I'm sure quite a lot better paid than the hospital cleaners that we've just been hearing about.
Oh, yeah.
And when you hear the Sue Gray report then and you hear about the, you know, the disrespect and the bad treatment of security staff and cleaners.
Yeah, it's disgraceful.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Very valuable job.
Yeah. The world depends on it and on people doing it. And, you know, everyone deserves to be respected for that. David, many thanks for that. I have to take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we were talking about that Sue Gray report and the revelations in it about how cleaners in number 10 were being treated. And we were talking to Liam and Linda at the start. And Linda, you're still there. Linda, I was just that question of money, because Liam was pointing out the pay rates for the hospital cleaners, which are really, really incredibly modest. Yeah. As a private cleaner, what kind of rates can you expect to get?
About at least €20 an hour. But as a contract cleaner, your wages are always just above minimum wages. So if you work for a company that does private houses, they wouldn't get the same wages that I get.
They'd get less than 20, would they, an hour?
Oh, yeah. Most of them would be on somewhere around 11.55 an hour.
Yeah, so again, we're talking about just above minimum wage.
Yeah. The most I ever heard from a private company was 15 an hour.
And would you get tips?
I always get, everywhere I've worked, you know, Christmas presents and quite often birthday present as well. I'd get, you know, gift brought back from if they went on holiday. Quite a lot of people I've worked for would give me holiday pay. They don't have to because I'm technically self-employed. But, you know, so because being a private cleaner in private homes, you're sort of semi-part of the family.
It does. I mean, if you're getting birthday presents and they're thinking about you when they're on holidays and bringing you back gifts, you're very knitted into those families, obviously, Linda.
Yeah. You wouldn't get tips as such. Now, for a period of time, I actually worked in a hotel as a chambermaid, which is just as bad. It's low paid. And there you'd get some tips. But I say in a private home, most people I found would give you maybe an extra, you know, and I know talking friends of mine that are cleaners, They'd get probably a box of chocolates, or they'd get a Christmas present and an extra week's wages.
Okay, I suppose, yeah, so much of it depends on the relationships
yeah.
that have been built up there. Linda, I just want to ask Liam that as well. I'm thinking about that €1,000 for people who are earning, you know, 11 or 12 euro an hour.
They really should. It shouldn't be noon and that, you know, they either get a tax credit because they don't work for HSE directly doesn't mean they're not. They really did work hard over the COVID and they put their lives on the line. And, you know, as a taxpayer, I want them to have that €1,000.
Yes. And Liam, I'm sure Thiago that you were talking about there, £1,000 would be a massive bonus, a massive boost to somebody in his position.
To a lot of these guys, the point is, you know, I hope somebody picks up on this conversation or somebody listens in and does something for these people. The thought of them getting 11 something an hour, and I'm working beside these guys and I see how hard they work. And I think of the money I get, it can't be justified under any circumstances. And especially during the COVID, these guys were putting their lives on the line. Do you know what I mean? They had more exposure to the COVID than probably most of us.
Yeah. And of course, because of the circumstances and because, you know, so many people were kept out of these COVID rooms, Thiago and all the Thiagos in our hospitals would often be the first people into the room when somebody passed away from COVID.
Oh, absolutely. And then they had to clean up everything and the whole lot, you know. And I must say, any of them I've met, their work ethic is unbelievable. And I've worked with these guys in the COVID unit and they deserve a huge applause for the work they've done. But unfortunately, they don't get the acknowledgement that they should.
But as you say, at a very minimum, they need that €1,000. We need to open up that conversation again. And because it was all talk about it, and then suddenly the talk just stopped. And
But I heard now that we're supposed to be getting this at the end of June. But the point is, these people should have got it before any of us. And there shouldn't be any doubt or any argument about these people getting this. You know, it'd be a terrible injustice if they end up not getting this.
Yeah, you'll get no argument here on that front, Liam. I want to bring in Marie now. Marie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
You also have a long career as a cleaner.
No, you talked about
the cleaning ladies you had, yes.
Yeah, we had two of them now. One of them passed on since. But I had an excellent relationship with her. I was just telling Lisa there. I had an excellent relationship with that lady. I remember my bag was stolen back in 92 or something like that. And she brought me in a handbag the following week. And she said to me, I'd never use that. You might as well have it.
So this is a cleaner where I worked.
And then she was with us for a number of years, but as I say, she passed on. And then we had there's a young girl, she's still there, I'm retired, the young girl is still there, and she comes down to visit me. We have an excellent relationship, and she was treated in the office like one of the rest of us, like Christmas time, Easter, whatever was going, you know, presents, whatever. We always made sure that she was one of the gang, if you like. She always got something. We never left her out of anything. And as well as that, she is not in great health, let me put it that way, so I won't elaborate any further. But we made sure at all times that she got paid because she was employed through an agency, and we paid the agency whether she came in or not to ensure that she got her wages. We would never, like, she was never looked down on her, neither was the other lady. It just wasn't an option
Can I ask you, Marie, what kind of a workplace were we talking about? Was it an office with a small number of people working in it, or?
Yeah, small number of people, yeah.
So you were kind of all the one family, really, regarded each other as...
More or less. Oh, yeah, she was just treated like one of us, like, and when she'd come in, if somebody in the office was making coffee, they'd say, fancy a cup of coffee or do you want a cup of tea? You know, like, she'd make it for us or we'd make it for her or whatever. And she'd sit down with us and have a cup of coffee and she'd talk to us and whatever. Like, it was really a good relationship. Now, as I say, she is still there. I'm retired. And I'm sure she's still been treated exactly the same as she was when I was there.
That is good to hear.
We never, ever treated them any differently. Because, I mean, as that gentleman said, they are the salt of the earth and they work their backsides off and they do work that probably you and I would never be capable of doing.
Well, from those stories,
poor people in the hospital.
Marie, when I hear the stories from Linda, I know I wouldn't be capable of doing it.
Exactly. Yeah, you and me both.
Yeah.
But I mean, at the end of the day, how dare people look down on these people? They're bloody hard workers and they don't get paid what they should get paid. You know what I mean? Like, they're, as you heard there yourself, it's barely above the minimum wage. It's a disgrace. Oh, you're just a cleaner. You're not just a cleaner. I mean, dirty, filthy jobs that some of them have to do is absolutely foul. I tell you, I wouldn't do it. I tell them where to shove it, God forgive me. But I mean, at the end of the day, these poor people are depending on their wages and they obviously feel they must do it.
Do you think, Linda,
that pressure.
Listening to Marie there, do you think things are improving? Do you think people are, you know, more respectful and more understanding of the role that cleaners play in all our worlds now?
No. I mean, I remember walking into a public toilet and this poor woman being berated because she had the temerity to put out a wet floor sign. She was cleaning the cubicles. And this woman took great offence at the fact she was cleaning the cubicles. I mean, I want to see the cubicles clean. And I stood there and I just said, well, what's your problem? And she said, she should do this at a time that isn't inconvenient to others. So, you know, there are those people that consider I can scream at, you know, they scream at shop assistants.
Yeah.
But it's that mentality of, you know, and the vast majority of people says, oh, right, yeah, I'll walk around the wet patch or something, but it's just a small minority of people that work, that operate that way.
Yeah.
And if you slip on the wet patch, somebody will claim. Yeah. That's a joke.
You're not wrong there, Marie. You're not wrong there.
And you know, the compo culture in this country.
Yeah. But look, that's all over. You know, you put out a sign to say, don't walk here. I've got to walk right across where you don't want me to walk. I don't care who I inconvenience, and if they end up inconveniencing themselves, that's not my fault. You should have stopped me.
Okay, I'm told I have to take another break. Linda, many, many thanks for that. Liam, thank you. And Marie, thank you. We'll take that break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, moving on, I want to go to Claire Cullen. Claire, good afternoon.
Hello.
Claire, you are trying for a baby?
I am.
And it's not cheap.
It is not cheap, no. It certainly is not cheap.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, Claire. Have you been on this journey, is that the way we put it these days, for some time, or where are you at?
Yeah, so we've been trying like consistently since around November 2020. Because I had a miscarriage in November 2020. So we started originally in March 2020, but it's been consistent since November 2020. And so that's about a year and a half now straight.
Or 18 months,
as
you will have been counting it.
Yeah.
So how is it? How are you about this? Like, how are you in your head about this?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of a hard question to answer, I suppose. It's a very frustrating process. And, you know, there's only kind of so much that you can control in it, I suppose. So you have to sort of let it go a bit and just be like, you know, what will happen. But then I suppose the longer that you go trying, you're like more willing to try stuff, if you know what I mean. And so you kind of, you're like, okay, next. That hasn't worked, so we're going to try something else. And you're just sort of, yeah, you're pulling at strings, I suppose, to try and figure out what on earth you can do to help this process move along.
Okay,
so it's also quite a lonely process, I guess. Like, I think I'm very talkative and very outspoken about the fact that we're going through this, which has been great for me, because actually loads of people have talked to me and said, well, actually, we had similar issues and you wouldn't have known it just from, like, Instagram or whatever. So, like, that has actually been amazing, because it is a very lonely process to go through.
Yeah, and going back to our opening point, can be quite expensive. So talk me through some of the things you have now entered into your life since you've started down this road.
Yeah, so what happened to me recently was I basically had like a kind of straw that broke the camel's back moment. And that was because there's a lot of costs that are, you know, involved in trying to have a baby. And then there's also a lot of hidden costs as well. And so, as I said, they kind of build up then as well. So, I mean, obviously when you're trying for a baby, you're going to budget for things that you know are coming. So things like GP visits, tests, all those kind of things, blood tests. You're going to budget for them because you know that they're going to come up. But then there's like other kind of slightly more hidden costs. I feel like everything that has the word conception on it is like double the price of the thing next to it on the shelf. There's like ovulation sticks, there's pregnancy tests, there's medicines that you might have to go on.
And how much does this stuff cost for people who are not out there looking at this stuff? Like, how much is an ovulation sticks?
Yeah, so and there are cheaper ways to do it, I guess. But for me, I did originally bulk buy my ovulation test on Amazon, thinking this is great, now I'll save money. But somebody told me that they're not as accurate, so you have to get the digital ones. So then I went into the pharmacy to get the digital ones. So the digital ones are €40 a packet, and they, you know, will only last one cycle. So that's about €40 a month. So then you're spending, you know, whatever, I'd say minimum €20 a month on your pregnancy tests. And then I'm on a medicine to help me ovulate.
Okay,
So.
I'm just adding it up here. That we're at €60 now. And yeah,
so go on. I'm on a medicine to help me ovulate. And that probably works out about €10 a month, which is, you know,
okay,
affordable. But you add that on to your
€70. We're up at 70.
And I've been recommended acupuncture as well. So acupuncture, as far as I know, is around €70 a session.
€140. Yeah. If you only go once a month.
I don't know how many sessions you need a month now. You might need two. Like, I'm investigating that at the minute.
We're up to 210.
And then, so of course, then you've got your other things, like you've got your GP visits, which would be €60 a pop, blood tests. I've had like blood tests.
Yeah,
I've had blood tests that cost kind of 15 or whatever, and then I've had blood tests that cost 85.
Okay, we're well over. We've broken through the €300 mark now,
yeah.
Claire.
And so but as I said, I totally understand that. Yeah, you're budgeting for tests and stuff coming up. Like, I've been recommended two more tests. One will be 125, the next one will be 400. So there's certain tests you budget for and certain big expenditures you budget for. But the straw that broke the camel's back moment for me was that I got prescribed these supplements. And as far as I can tell, they're just supplements for when you're trying to have a baby. And
what,
I went into
what
the
kind
pharmacy.
Of things, like vitamins, or do you know what's in them?
So I don't know what's in them. I don't really even know, like, what they're for, what they do, or because I haven't had a test to say, like, to check if I'm missing low in this or high on that or whatever. So I don't even, it wasn't really explained to me, like, why I needed them. But I just went in with my prescription and they were €140. And
for how many? For how long would that last you?
So this is the thing. So I paid for it and then I went out to my car and realised, I was thinking it's a one-off cost, like, you know, just we'll eat it and move on. But it was actually only for a 30-day supply. And my kind of thing was, I was like, I know that there are cheaper conception supplements out there, but they're still like €50 a bottle for a 30-day supply. But I was kind of thinking, like, why are these ones three times the price of the ones, you know, that you can get over the counter? They'd want to be magic. Do you know what I mean?
It sure would. €140 for 30 day supply.
Yeah, so I would have to. And, like, obviously, as somebody who's been trying for 18 months, like, that's not something I could feasibly keep doing another 18
months. And Claire, just to say, you're a very young woman. I mean,
thanks.
But you're still in your, we could still call you early 30s. You haven't hit your mid 30s yet.
I'm just about early 30s. Yeah, I've just gone 34. So yeah, no, I'm not. I'm technically, my daughter keeps telling me I'm still only young. So that's fine. But Yeah, the longer it goes, the more you kind of want to try different things, and the more, yeah, you sort of, I suppose, panic's not the right word, but you start to get worried, like, why isn't it happening? And so you're more likely to try all these kind of things. But that was just my, like, sort of straw the birds of camel's back moment. I was like, €145 for a 30-day thing of supplements that I'm not even really sure, like, what they're for. And, I mean, I'm on a medicine that makes me ovulate, and that's like a tangible thing, if that makes sense.
Yes.
So, like, it's changing something inside me to make it more likely. But these were just supplements. So, like, it was powder that you put into a drink.
Do you think there is a touch, and we're not going to say which one this is now, as you say, there's quite a few brands out there, but there's a touch of the snake oil to this, like that you feel very vulnerable, that people, you know, as I say, if somebody came to you and said, look, take this thing, this one thing is going to be the thing that will make the difference.
Yeah.
You will take that thing, even if it is €140 a month.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's definitely an element of, like, you're kind of, you're feeling like your increasing desperation is being commodified a little bit. And yeah, I do feel that, like, slap the word conception on something and double the price. That's really what it feels like.
That, you know what, that just reminds me of the wedding thing. That, you know, you put two cakes side by side and put wedding in front of one of them, and that's added 100 quid to the price of it. That was always the case with wedding issues. But the idea that people who are so desperate, you know, are really in many cases very desperate and have, as you say, very vulnerable on this road to try and have a family, that would be taken advantage of is pretty lousy, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I guess that's capitalism. You know what I mean? There's a market people are willing to spend, because, you know, especially the longer you go, kind of the more you really want it to happen. But it just, yeah, it doesn't feel great.
Claire, are you able to hang on for us for a little while? I just want to bring Robert in, who's on another line. Thanks, Claire. Robert, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Claire. Hi.
You and your wife spent a huge amount of money on various fertility treatments over the years.
Yeah, about 5 years of our life was taken up with trying to have babies. We basically ran out of time. So we went for all the treatments, IUI first, then IVF, a few cycles of IVF, which were all unsuccessful. The cost of those were roughly about, I think, in total about $20,000. Then our option was really to travel outside the country and try and get a donor egg, which we did. So there's initial consultation with your consultants, etc., which is obviously costly. There's all the medication you've got to put up with your wife and injector, etc., and all the trauma and pain that causes, and the potential danger for the future for her. She's getting older, the legacy of that whole ordeal. We were basically given the option to go to the States. So we took it, up to Maryland, and we went over. We were fortunate to be able to afford it, to be honest. You know, we put a lot of our lives on hold. You know, we lived in an unrenovated house for six years or so. Drove old cars. Didn't eat particularly well.
Let's just call that one out, actually, Robert, because, you know, you say you were able to afford it, and people say you're very, very lucky that you were in that position. But you made huge sacrifices in other parts of your life
I gave up drinks and cigarettes, so I didn't have that expense. We didn't socialise. Literally, it was all about having babies, and every resource we had went into that.
The strain of all of that, though, that huge laser focus on this one, you know, possibly unachievable dream, this one thing you both want so badly, it must have put a lot of strain on the relationship.
When your wife, when the person you love turns to you and says, I don't want to die alone, it doesn't matter what impediments is put in front of you, you'll absolutely try your damnedest to do it for her, which is what I did.
And we should tell people that there is a happy ending. You were successful, which is fantastic.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, $80,000 later, okay? So
$80,000, wow.
$80,000 later. Now, we got some of that back. The trip to the USA was, I think, about €55,000. So the other treatments we had made up the difference there. We got some of that back because there's a revenue thing where you can claim for a procedure which can't be done in the country. Mm-hmm. You can claim some of it back. It's put back in your tax, et cetera, that. I'm not sure the quantities, what we got back. Really, we didn't care at that stage. We were delighted. We were pregnant with twins. After miscarriages, after, you know, we had to do two trips to the USA to get pregnant. We went once, she was implanted, she got a miscarriage, and then we went back for her, and we said, listen, put two embryos in. This is our last shot.
And it really was your last shot that.
Well, I mean, the last $10,000 we had to come up with, it took us a year to get it.
You scraped it together?
We scraped it together, we did. And now I'm the proud father of twin boys. They're 4 years of age. They're starting school in September. It's been a roller coaster.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely.
I can't. Those such precious, precious boys.
I'll tell you this thing, Katie. I've been judged by people in my family and who said, well, they're not really your children. They are my children, yeah, and they are my wife's children. She carried them. They're my genes. She carried them. She did everything that was. She did more than any mother possibly in history. I would actually think of that. Think of the length that we had to go through to come up with that amount of money.
Absolutely.
And work and all that and take the time off that's needed. I mean, it's a pretty, pretty, you know, damning sort of condemnation of the Irish Health Board, to be honest, as well, that we don't provide that. I mean, I'm raising two taxpayers, two men who will go on and inherit what we have and will contribute to the society. They're bright, beautiful boys. And yet the Irish state doesn't seem to be particularly interested. But yet they will be very interested when they start paying, you know, when they start paying tax. They'll be extremely interested for the rest of their lives. So I just think the Irish state needs to wake up. Really, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. And I know that there is campaigning for this now, and there is some kind of talk in government circles about providing some IVF for free.
Look, it's a positive thing.
In the UK, it's absolutely normal to have you get your three IVF rounds on the NHS, and that's just taken for granted.
Well, society has forced women into a situation where they're being because of lack of childcare, they've been forced into a situation to work later in life, to have a career, to afford to buy a house, to afford to pay for their life, etc. We know what the cost of living, etc. And for them to then, you know, have to wait longer in life, potentially to get married, people want to go traveling, colleges, all that. So individuals are having families later and later in life. And my partner, she just ran out of eggs. She's a beautiful, beautiful, healthy person. And just time that wasn't on our side. And she's the most amazing, strong, fierce woman I've ever met in my life. And you wouldn't think it to see her.
She's an incredible person. But the amount of love that must be showered on your boys... I mean, there's love showered at every, you know.
I spend every day with them, single day with them. They haven't been away from me for more than an hour in 4 years. They're the most precious things. And when you fought so hard for them, God almighty, I took them out of my wife's womb and I gave them their first bath. And my wife, unfortunately, was out of it at the time. So I told her all about it.
And of course, you have a great line to throw at them, you know, when they're driving you crazy a little later in life. You know, you cost me $80,000.
You owe me.
You owe me big.
I'm taking it out of your pocket money.
Robert, I just want, I'm worried about Claire now listening to your story because she's at a much earlier stage and hopefully won't have to go through the hoops
through. I wish you very well. The long, lonely journey, as you said, we felt very isolated and very lonely. Unable to talk to family, all that sort of stuff. So it's a difficult time for people, and you need the state to be there for you. You can't really rely on family or friends because it's a very private issue. So you want to be slightly anonymous, and you want to be able to have the state support you throughout this. And unfortunately, that's not my experience. That's not my experience.
Claire, does it get to you that you have to carry the financial burden of this yourself, and you know, you pay your taxes and then you pay for all of this on top of it?
I suppose I didn't really think of it like that. It was frustrating when those supplements that I mentioned that were really expensive weren't covered by the drug scheme. I do know that, like, the healthcare system that we have and all is a blessing, and it's something that not every country has access to. But yeah, it would be great if there was a little bit more maybe that you could do publicly before you have to go private, because then the costs really begin to rack up, as Robert went through there. And it's also part of it as well is maybe knowledge. Like, before I started this process, I hadn't a clue about any of it, and I sort of had to do all that research myself. So, you know, more knowledge would also be great in, like, what are the steps, what should you do first, what should you do second, and stuff like that. And what maybe an expectation of, like, listen, this, you're going to have to get these kind of things, this is going to cost this much, et cetera.
And Claire, am I right? My sense from you is that you're still very, I mean, obviously you've been at this, what, about 18 months? But you're pretty optimistic. You've a lot of time on your hands, really.
Yeah, I'm pretty optimistic. I'm fully hoping that we can do this ourselves without having to go to the next step and get an intervention and get like IUI or IVF. But I guess only time will tell. So I'm on, as I mentioned, I'm on a medication that helps me ovulate, and you're only allowed really to be on that for 6 months, as far as I'm aware. So once that time is up, we'll sort of see, do we have to move on to another step? But I'm cautiously optimistic that maybe we won't have to get any further intervention.
Robert, do you have advice for Claire?
No, I wouldn't presume to advise any woman on what to do with her body. All I'd say to her, if she's a partner or a friend, dig deep with each other. Make sure that you're there for each other, because it's a difficult time.
And
the money is nothing. When you see those babies come out, the money means nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And the pain and everything else that everything went through just washes away. So I wish you really well. I hope you're very successful, and I hope you have a beautiful family going forward.
Oh, thank you so much.
You sound like you deserve it.
Claire, will you come back to us when you do?
I will.
We want, once you have that very expensive second line on that very expensive pregnancy test, we want to hear about it, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Claire, many thanks for
thank
that.
You.
And Robert, thank you so much. And congratulations to you and your wife again.
It's a fabulous story. Thank you.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, going back to the discussion we had at the opening of the programme about cleaners and how we respond to cleaners and react to cleaners and pay cleaners. John, good afternoon.
Oh, hi, Adam. Hi, good afternoon, Chair.
John,
I was just listening to one of your ladies there, the lady cleaner, who was saying how badly she was treated at times. I worked in a hospital for nearly 20 years, going back 30 years now. And we had the matron and an assistant matron and the sisters and then the nurses and all that. And it was like a hierarchy down, you know, the top of the ladder was the matron, then, you know, going down to the assistant matron and the sisters and nurses. And then you had the porters, and then you had the cleaners. The cleaners were at the bottom of the ladder. And they were barely spoken to by a lot of the hierarchy, you know. They'd only bark at them. But there was one lady, and she's a terrible nice lady, cleaner lady, and I was very friendly with her, and I used to see her getting treated terrible by the assistant matron, right?
Right.
And she'd walk on the floor where she was cleaning and get out of my way, and you know, the things she said were like, you know. So I took her into my head to be even extra nice. I was being nice, but extra. And every morning I'd see her coming in, and I'd say to her, "Good morning, Mrs. Gilligan. How are you this morning?" And the sister matron caught me 3 or 4 times doing this, and she roared at me. "Who do you think you were speaking to her like that?" I said, "What did I say? Why are you calling her Mrs. Gilligan, giving her a title? Who is she, you know?"
Oh, what did she want you to call her?
Well, anything but respect. with respect.
What was that about? What was that about, do you think? I mean, where was that coming from?
It was coming from our ego. You know, as I said, you had the matron who was at the top, and the matron was a lovely woman. But then she was like a demon. And then there were a lot of the sisters who were absolutely terrible to the staff. And then there were nurses who you know, the older nurses would be the same. They'd treat the younger nurses with terrible disrespect, you know. But it was like the Victorian days. I'm talking about 30 years ago.
I was going to say, there sounds a touch of the upstairs, downstairs about that.
Oh, just terrible, terrible. Well, thank God that they got a new matron in, right? When the old assistant matron and matrons, they actually died. They died, you know, God rest them. And the new matron came in, and it was just, you know, amazing. She'd come in, and she would actually lend me her car to pop home if I'd got something, or if someone wanted a message done. I'd come in and say, listen, Nurse Doyle is at the leave in her badge or whatever it is, you know, at home. And she asked me to go and collect, would you lend me a car? Of course, you know, no problem. The same as the doctors, when the doctors retired, you know, there was one lovely guy who actually nearly ran the place, and he was the only, he was a gentleman, a saint. And then there were the other guys that weren't so good either, you know.
And
I know it's only 30 years, a long time, but it's not that long ago, you know.
Yeah. And in terms of pay going back that time, would porters like yourself have been much better paid than cleaners even then?
Oh, much, much better, I think, yeah. Yeah. But at the same time, we weren't paid that well either. I had to work nearly 7 days a week. I had a day off every second week. And a day and a half, you know, the phone, to make up your wages. You had to do it. You had to work Christmas.
You had to work overtime to just...
Christmas Day, Stephen's Day, to get ahead of yourself with the mortgage and things like that, you know. But yeah. Now, I've been in hospital myself as a patient many times now, and you see the respect that the porters are getting now and the cleaners, you know.
And do you think it has changed from your day?
Fantastically, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because you know we have differing views on that, and I don't know if you heard our conversation earlier about the lot of Brazilian people who were in cleaning in hospitals at the moment, who are studying here, and they have their extra hours that they can work, and and they take up these jobs, and we're told that they're just not getting anything like the money they deserve or the respect they deserve.
Right, I didn't hear the whole program. I had me little grandchild here to mind, you know. It's terrible. It's terrible, but it's just a lack of awareness, I think. You know, we're all, there's no one person on this planet any better than the other. They can think it, but they're not.
Well, isn't that the line? You know? You're not worse than anybody else, and you're not better than
anybody
else.
And you're not better. Not any way better at all. Not any way better. Yeah. We're all the same. And we all come in, do our little bit, and then we go back out again. And it's just people's lack of awareness, I think, of their fellow man to be treating him like that, you know.
Yeah. Anya, good afternoon.
How are you? Yeah, no, I would totally agree with what that man was saying there. But, like, it's just people mix things up. Well, like, when you think of Downing Street, there's an awful lot of very privileged, entitled people are there. So they have notions about themselves, and ego's bigger than anything. But I think in day-to-day, I think, especially I find with the Irish, we mix actual breeding with money. So we presume if people have money, they have class. And they've, you know, a moral fibre, which is absolutely wrong. That's how people categorise people, where they live. Like, we're all born the one way and we die the one way. And it's things get in the way, and egos and people who are, you know, it's just shocking. So, and you can also see those Brazilians in many roles, not as cleaners, been treated and dismally, basically, I think.
You can still see it today, can't you?
In different areas
in jobs, but...
Stay with me. I want to bring in Kathleen. Kathleen, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. Hi. I'm just thinking about that first lady who said she was an engineer, and then when she disclosed she was a cleaner, how their image of her dropped, you know. Mm-hmm. And this is just with me, like, years ago, I was a teacher, but when I took a career break, I would have worked as a at a chambermaid in hotels.
Oh yeah, I've been there myself, Kathleen. That is hard work now.
In London and in America. But I must say, in London, you were felt a bit invisible, quite invisible, and you know, you wouldn't be thought of. And then when I went to America, it was better. Like, we went to the group and it was nice. But you were kind of, you weren't really treated as if you were educated. And of course, you weren't going to say, look, I was a teacher. But anyway, I just felt that that an education, I suppose, would have been, it's the right thing to it's, I'm getting confused now, really, but I'm trying to say that people, I suppose, look down you because you're only a chambermaid or
they make
only a
assumptions.
Cleaner, whatever.
They make assumptions about you.
And there's times, you know, when I was there, I'd say, oh my God, was I really a teacher? You know what I mean? You say, gee, so you feel so downtrodden, really. And, you know, it brought back memories of people from those Magdalen loans and everything who would be so downtrodden that they'd feel they weren't even worth anything, you know, so long. I mean, I was only a short time and it just proved.
How did you find being a chambermaid? It's a very particular kind of job, isn't it?
It's hard enough, yeah. But you learned how to do the beds and everything. It was good in a way to learn how to do the beds properly, like an envelope and this. But, you know, it was hard, heavy work, a big, huge bed, especially in some of those posh places in London. And people didn't really speak to you at all. You know, the people, they may have left you a little tip and it was nice to get it. But, you know, you weren't treated as, I suppose, an individual or a... definitely not an equal, but in America now it's better, and it's only for a short time we did it, you know. So we were.
Yeah, I think that there is, and I suppose the tipping culture goes way back in America as well, but there is a slightly different approach to the service industry in general, I think, in America.
Would that be right? The Irish girls, and we were treated well, and we were asked to sing at some function or other, you know, our Irish songs or something, and the treated us quite well. It was nice. But I suppose I just felt. There's times I said, my God, was I really a teacher? Do you know what? Had I a decent job? And I was glad to be able to get back out of it. I was just travelling, like, and it was handy to do a little bit of work, you know? But that lady from England there, I just felt for her there when she said she was an engineer. She was treated one way. When she said she was a cleaner, she was definitely not... an invisible kind of person.
Could I just tell you a very short story? Right?
Yes.
In the hospital, we had a cleaner, a lovely lady. She came in at, I think it was 5 or 6 in the morning to do our cleaning. She looked after all the stairs. That lady was a buyer for Cleary's going back all those years. And she became ill. And she couldn't, she was emotionally ill, God love her. Mm-hmm. She couldn't get a job at anything else other than a cleaner then, you know. And she was treated like, you know, a piece of dirt on the ground. And she was more educated than anyone I ever met in the hospital.
And when you say treated like a piece of dirt, like how, in what way?
Well, she'd be spoken down to and you know, told to get out of the way and, you know, just terrible treatment, you know.
Yeah, I'd just like to say there, that's how breeding is lacking in people. Who gives one person the right over another to talk to them in a certain way or to treat them a certain way? Yes, if people have argy-bargies and, you know, someone comes out, you know, you give your bit in a normal, you know, nothing to do
such
with
an
them.
Educated
but how
person.
Do you look at someone that you... How do you have that mindset to look at someone that they're better than you or lesser than you? I just... And that society allows that and enables it and it's still enabling it today.
Yeah.
When you love to see Boris Johnson having to work as a cleaner for... a number of weeks or months see how he would pick it up. I mean, he's privileged and should treat people better, you know. He's despicable, really.
An amateur.
And blaming it on the people then, blaming his misdemeanours and all the others on the cleaners and staff.
Yeah, well, he's getting away with it, folks. He's definitely, I think he's going to live to survive another day on this one. I have to take a break.
All right.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We've only a minute left, but I want to get to Norma. Norma, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Speak fast, Norma, because your story, I think, is important.
My mother was a cleaner, and there were 6 in family, and for all her hard working hours she put in as a cleaner, she had 4 nurses and a doctor.
She put you all through... to college
and training
and nurse training.
Yes. And she was a cleaner.
And was she happy to say she was a cleaner, or did she have any issues?
Oh, she never denied it. Never denied it.
And how
it.
Did you feel about it?
She always felt it was work, you know.
But yourselves, I'm saying, her children.
Pardon?
How did her children, like yourselves and your siblings, feel about it?
Oh, we never denied what she did, far off, like, you know. She walked from the north side of Cork to the south side of Cork when we were all very young, cleaning. And she was treated very disrespectfully that time. But then, as the years went on, she was shown some bit of respect.
Well, she must have been incredibly proud of all of you, and fair play to her. What a woman.
Oh, she was.
All that hard work to pay off. Norm, I'm delighted I got you. I just got you in before the end. But
okay.
That is all the time we have. Let me see. And I've lost my credits. Today's programme BCO was Elaine Conlon, Aisling Grofferty was on sound, and today's programme was produced by Brenda Donoghue. And that's all we have time for. We'll hand you over to Ray.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.